Beautiful Muscle. The podcast is starting.
Hello and welcome to Potterfix Totalis, a Harry Potter read-along podcast. I'm one of your hosts, Joe.
And I'm here too.
Yes, she is. We'll never get back to her name.
I'm Cassie.
We are diving into Chapter 4 of Harry Potter and the Chamber of Secrets at Flourish and Blotts.
Yes.
It is Cassie's turn to do the recap.
Chapter summary, sure. 20 episodes in.
We're doing well.
You got that timer for me?
Ready, set, go.
Harry and the Weasleys receive their Hogwarts shopping lists and plan to meet the Grangers at Diagon Alley. Harry messes up with the flu powder and ends up in Nocturne Alley, where he sees the Malfoys. Hagrid rescues him. They see Lockhart at the bookstore, and Arthur and Lucius get into a fistfight at the bookstore. The end.
16 seconds.
I was about to say a bad word. Heck yeah.
I'm not great at them.
No. See how fast I can do them? Do you know how I learned that skill?
Taking notes.
Yeah. And also being from New York and talking really fast.
See, I'm also from New York and the same town as you, but...
Yeah, but you've got that like slow, smooth voice. I sound like I am moving like Wile E. Coyote. That's not who I meant. Roadrunner is the right one. Who is Wile E. Coyote?
Just stop. We'll forget about that conversation.
Is Wile E. Coyote the one that tries to blow Roadrunner? Okay, I was close.
You were right. In the general area, yeah. Yep.
That's what happens in Flourish and Blotts in Chapter 4 of Harry Potter and the Chamber of Secrets. And we are going to talk about it in more detail now.
Yes, and we start out in the Burrow.
My favorite place, which I talked about for an hour and 15 minutes last week.
So thankfully you won't have to hear too much more about it.
No, I purposefully skipped over all that in my notes because I'm like, no one cares, Cassie. You already did this.
I did like that Harry runs into a mirror that just insults him.
I don't think it insults him. It says like, tuck your shirt in.
Scruffy.
Yeah.
You know, it's telling him to look better, but yeah. Also... insulting him.
It's not an insult. I liked that Percy sat on Errol. I thought that was very funny.
He like picks him up. What is this thing? He's just holding a limp owl.
That was my favorite part of the chapter.
It's very good.
It was very funny. But all of the Weasleys plus Harry are around the dinner table or breakfast table. I think they're eating breakfast. Yep. And Owl Post
Bacon
arrives.
Sandwiches.
Yeah, I don't know about that. Owl Post arrives and they get their Hogwarts shopping lists. And this evoked, of course, cherished memories from my childhood of school supply shopping.
You're the worst kind of person.
I know. I love school supply shopping. But so they get their Hogwarts book lists and there are some new additions to the book list.
Aside from one book, it is entirely written by Gilderoy Lockhart.
Yes, there are 7 books by Lockhart on this list. All of them have titles that are alliterative, meaning they repeat a letter.
Break with a Banshee.
Yeah.
Gadding with Ghouls.
Yeah.
Holiday with Hags.
Yeah. Technically, it's consonants, but it falls under the alliteration banner. But okay. Yeah, so that was a cute little device of Lockhart when writing his books to name them all like that. I think that it gives them sort of a fantastical element to them. Like, even within the fantasy world of Harry Potter, like, these titles evoke what we would expect, like, fantasy novels to be called, or like mystery novels to be called, like M is this, for murder.
Yeah, this evoked more of a like mystery novel vibe, especially the audience that was following him.
But like there's a real hokiness to them, I think.
Absolutely.
Titles.
And for all of these to be school books and supposedly things with facts and you're learning from them.
Yeah.
For it to be called Wanderings with Werewolves.
It's real weird compared to like the standard Book of Spells grade 2.
Yeah.
Yeah, because this is like a textbook list. It's like when you take a class and the professor puts a book written by them on the syllabus.
I have done that. It's awful.
Well, you have been in that
class. I have been in that class.
You have not been that professor, thankfully.
No, I have not been a professor.
Or like when it's, I don't know if you ever encountered this, but there would be like your special school edition, like the Harvard edition of this textbook, which has like two lines changed to be specific to your school, but it also means that it's really hard to find a used copy of it. Mm-hmm. This is what that reminded me of. It's real bad.
That, and they also explicitly say, like, oh, all his books are very expensive.
Yes.
So he's making a school filled of children. Like, they go up to year seven.
Yeah.
So seven grades worth of children have to buy all of his books.
Yes. And so I did a little research on this. The Harry Potter Wiki claims that each of Lockhart's books are 5 gallons each. There was no citation for this, and I do not remember that being stated specifically in...
No, and we also learn explicitly that the Weasleys do not have dirt that poor money.
Yeah, we'll talk about that. Don't worry. But even if, like, let's just go with that 5 gallons line. If each book is 5 galleons, there are 7 books on this list, which makes 35 galleons. 5 galleons in modern day dollars, and this is according to the Harry Potter Lexicon's Wizard Money Converter, which uses like actual, like, hey, this is what the dollar is worth today. Mm-hmm. 5 galleons is $32.90. So 7 of these books is like $230. And spread that across the 5 Weasley children, this is like a small fortune that the Weasleys have to pay for these stupid books.
Yeah.
It's crazy. And I mean, I guess theoretically they could share the books, but...
But not really, because they all have to study.
Yeah.
And like, we don't know yet where Ginny's going to be placed.
Yeah. Yeah. It's crazy. That's a ton of money. Yeah. But we'll talk about money and Gilderoy. A lot. Actually, let's talk about money, because this, honestly, this chapter is about money. I think
if there's a lot of money,
this is chapter, I think, is where it's made very explicit that Harry is rich and the Weasleys are dirt poor, and it makes everyone uncomfortable all the time.
I don't know about all the time.
Not all the time.
Harry feels very awkward for like, yes, 4 minutes.
I don't think so. I think because when the Weasleys get the book lists, they're like, this ain't going to be cheap. And Molly's like, we'll figure it out. We'll manage. And Harry is like feeling awkward about it. Like he's thinking like, God, I got this vault filled with gold down at Gringotts, and the Weasleys are trying to figure out how to afford their school books. Mm-hmm. And he feels awkward about it then. And then that's repeated when they go to Gringotts and he sees the poor in more than one way.
The Weasleys have 1 galleon and a pile of silver sickles.
This breaks my GD heart. It's so sad. And especially given the numbers that I just said, that a galleon is $32.
You said 5 galleons was.
5 galleons is $32. That means that the Weasleys have like 10 bucks in their vault.
Yeah. Although I'm very impressed with the Gringotts system of like, they just cleared out that bank account. And they're not going to close it. Like, it's just going to be like, oh, this is still the Weasley bank account.
Yeah. Also, the way bank accounts work in the Harry Potter universe does not make sense at all. Because I'm not a banking expert by any means. But my understanding is that there's not a little room at my bank with my name on it and just piles of cash there.
Well,
banks do stuff.
You can have like a lock.
You can have a safe deposit box, of course. Yeah. But like money.
Essentially, think of these as giant safety deposit boxes that you need to ride a roller coaster to visit.
That seems like an inefficient system. But like banks do things with your money while it's deposited.
Yes, real banks.
Yes, real banks.
But this bank also has like whatever goblins, you want to put in it. Not even like focusing on the goblins of like you can put like family heirlooms in there, whatever. It's like it essentially is just
it's
a giant safety deposit
box. It's still weird.
Yeah.
But it's heartbreaking to see how poor the Weasleys are. And I think Harry does feel guilty for it throughout the chapter. Yeah, it's just sad.
Let's talk about Harry being made to feel good by... Let's say that again. let's talk about Harry feeling good about being with the Weasleys.
Okay.
In the very beginning of this chapter, he's talking about how loud it is there, how
yeah.
the ghoul is howling and dropping pipes and everything. There are explosions coming from the Weasley twins' room. And it's like, oh, this is normal.
Yeah.
You know, this is just what you expect to happen.
And compare that too with just a couple chapters ago when he was at the Dursleys' house and they're like, make that owl shut up.
Yeah.
Go in your room. Pretend you don't exist.
Exactly.
Yeah. And so there's a life there and a freedom at the Burrow. I thought we were going to talk about the Burrow. I thought we said.
We're not talking about the Burrow. Okay. We're moving on now. I just wanted to point out, like, that's how we start. We talk about it's just so loud there.
Yeah.
Harry's just surprised that everyone likes him there.
<It's> so sad. Harry should pay the Weasleys rent.
So, all right, we can't get into the...
No, we can't. We can't. We can't talk about this too much. But it is really sad. And to relate this to real life and make a text-to-self connection, have you ever felt awkward about money around friends? Like, I ask this question just to bring your personal experiences into it, but also, like, what is an elegant way for Harry to navigate this situation?
I don't know. I feel like I had richer friends sometimes and
it was fine.
Yeah.
I guess you don't really go shopping.
No, we never went to like stores. It was just like, oh, he's got the new video game system.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I guess that makes sense then.
Then it was just like really convenient to.
I have rich friends and it's nice because they have the latest video games. I have definitely felt awkward about money in situations because I grew up pretty poor, so seeing how the other half lives, I shouldn't reference that. That's about people living in tenements and stuff.
Yeah, but you lived in a house in a
yeah
white
yes.
suburban town.
Yes, but I was relatively quite poor for the area. Yes. That's a better way of saying it. And so no, I've definitely felt the inverse of what Harry is feeling, of that awkwardness of like, oh, my friend can afford the new school supplies. And like, not that I really went shopping with friends that much, but like seeing people drop like $150 on clothes and I'm like, well, I'll get this one $8 shirt. Like, yeah, it's an awkward situation and it's kind of hard to figure out how to navigate it because you don't, as the person with money in that situation, I think that your natural instinct is to like buy something for your friend, you know, give them some money, at least for nice people, which I like to think that the characters in the Harry Potter books usually are.
But also that seems weird of like,
right. It's like, oh, you're a charity case.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so it's uncomfortable for everyone. And I definitely felt that as a kid, you know, like, or like when you go out to eat with friends and somebody like offers to pay for you, it's like, man, I could really use this. But like, I you want to save face kind of and not admit that and not be a leech. So it's a hard situation to navigate. And I think Harry actually does navigate it pretty well in this chapter, that like he tries to hide his bank account from them. I think not to rub it in their face, like not as a, I want you to think of me as somebody with similar experiences to you. And Harry does to an extent have similar experience. Like he's not just a rich kid because he goes and lives with the Dursleys who treat him like trash.
Yeah. And he points out like, this is only good for the wizarding world.
Yeah. Yeah. But yeah, I think that there's a really great moment at the bookstore too, that shows how Harry is going to approach this situation with the Weasleys that we can talk about when we get to the bookstore.
Yeah. Do
we want to jump to it? We can.
Yeah. Because he is given this free set of books by mm-hmm. Gilderoy Lockhart and he gives them to Ginny. It's just, he has to like, either they buy 5 copies of all these books or they buy 4 copies of all these books.
Right. And I think
it's not like he's using his money to give them something. He's not making it a thing. It's just here.
Right. Yeah. And I think there's 2 really important things there, that he is not out and out giving them money. It's like, this is something that I was just given. It's not something that I worked hard for and earned that I'm giving away to. It's something that just came about because I'm famous. Yeah. So like, I don't need to benefit from this. I already have all of this privilege. And so I'm going to give it to you, the people that need it. And so that alone is a really nice gesture, but I like that it's a very small moment. He doesn't make a big gesture out of it like Lockhart does, that Lockhart is standing there for the photo. He's like, he's going to be leaving with my books today. And it's this very big showy thing that Lockhart is doing in ingratiating himself with Harry. Mm-hmm. But Harry kind of slips through the crowds and just kind of tips them into Ginny's cauldron and is like, here, you take these. I'll buy my own. You know, and I don't think that there's really an implication there that anybody sees it. The big crowd is there focused on Lockhart, and he does it kind of in the back of the bookstore with no fanfare around it. And I think that's a really important character trait for Harry. And it makes the way that he's dealing with this situation very, it avoids them having to feel like a charity case.
Yeah.
Yeah. And of course the Weasleys will find out about it, like Molly and Arthur, because they'll go up to the cash register and Ginny will be like, oh, I already have these. So they'll find out, but it doesn't put anybody in that awkward situation of like having to ask for money or having to offer money.
Although if we're jumping around anyway, they're not really put in a situation where they find out. It seems like Ginny's there mm-hmm. with the cauldron and it's being filled with books that are already purchased.
Okay. Oh, so you're saying they might just see the books in there and assume they already paid?
Not necessarily. It's more like they're probably just aware that it happened. Like mm-hmm. Arthur's right there.
Okay.
Arthur's ready to immediately duke it out with Mr. Malfoy.
Yeah.
And they don't really have a chance to buy anything after that. They just leave right after that
okay.
situation.
Yeah.
So that's it seems like all that was already purchased and dealt with.
Okay. I really enjoyed that moment, though. I thought that was a nice showing of Harry's character and also a great contrast to the way different famous people in this chapter conduct themselves.
Mm-hmm.
So let's roll back a little bit. We talked about money. We talked about classism a little bit. There's more class stuff to get into with this. But
well, let's get to the fireplace.
Yes.
We're going to leave the burrow. Or Harry's going to leave the burrow and he's not going to have a great time of it.
Yes. So they're going to go to Diagon Alley. They're going to meet the Grangers there. And the Weasleys travel by flu powder.
Yes. And flu powder essentially is a powder that they sprinkle into the fireplace. And they say the location they're trying to go to. And then they step into the fire and they're taken to that location.
Yes. And the way that the Weasleys instruct Harry to do this is bad. They're like, keep your elbows in, keep your eyes closed, make sure you get out of the right gate, but wait until you see Fred and George, but your eyes are supposed to be closed. So like, really, it's not a shock that Harry messes this up.
But he messes it up in every way. They go through the list of, first, he does not say the location loud and clearly.
Uh-huh.
He chokes on ash.
Yeah.
And then steps into the fire. He then opens his eyes and gets sick.
Yeah.
And slams his elbows into passing fireplaces. Two things he was also told to do.
This is, but like, I feel this. Because whenever somebody gives me like verbal instructions, this is what ends up happening. Mm-hmm. I don't blame Harry at all.
I'm not saying he's at fault. It was more like, okay, he got overwhelmed, he panicked, and then everything he was told flew out the window.
Yeah. He ends up in a real bad place.
Yes.
A creepy shop in Nocturne Alley, which of course is a play on Nocturnally.
Yes. And the shop is called Borgin and Burks.
Yes. Which I have some things to say about Borgin and Burks. Galadriel suggests that the name Burke references William Burke, a famous criminal who murdered people by strangulation in order to get bodies that he could sell for dissections.
Okay.
It fits with Nocturnally. It fits with some of the stuff that they seem to be selling in this store.
Yeah, they're selling a lot of very interesting stuff. And on top of Nocturnally seems to be like, oh, this is where the dark wizards hang out.
Yeah.
So here's all these gross things. So this guy murdered people and took their
bodies
to sell.
Yeah.
it makes sense.
It fits. I couldn't find anything really about Borgen, but it's one of those words that just sounds gross.
Well, we meet Mr. Borgen.
We do meet Mr. Borgen, but like his name sounds like boil and booger to me.
Yeah, B words.
Yeah. The B words. But yeah, it's just a nasty sounding place. And it's a nasty sounding shop. I would not go in here. Although I did go in here at Harry Potter World, Orlando, Florida.
Yes, we did. So as Harry's trying to sneak out of the place, well, first he smashes into the wall when he comes out of the fireplace finally.
Yeah.
He's like, I just want this to be done. Everything's gone wrong. And he stops short and smashes his face into a wall and breaks his glasses. And he has he has to hold two halves of his glasses to his face. So it seems like both of his hands are now on his face so that he can see.
It's a really good day for Harry.
It's a great day for Harry.
And in walk two people.
Yes, the Malfoys.
The Malfoys, Draco Malfoy and Papa Malfoy.
Lucius Malfoy.
Lucius Malfoy. And Harry is like, oh no, Draco is here. I can't let him see me with my dirty cloak and my broken glasses, which I understand from the perspective of like, he's going to bully me for looking like garbage. But I also very much like the idea of Harry worrying about his appearance in front of Draco. Something about that is very funny to me.
Mm-hmm.
Let's talk about Lucius Malfoy.
We learn a little bit about Lucius Malfoy from Mr. Weasley.
And we learn a lot about Lucius Malfoy in this very chapter.
In this very chapter.
He attempts to sell illegal poisons and stuff to Borgen and Burks. But this dude, because, you know, I'm going to talk about the etymology. This dude's name is the most on the face stuff that J.K. Rowling has ever written. You're going to name a dude Lucius Malfoy? It's ridiculous. Like Malfoy. Okay. Already.
Mal is bad.
Yes. This dude's name is like two letters off from being Lucifer. Like he had no chance to be a good guy. It's a silly name, but also like it's pretty good. I will say that there is a character named Lucius in Shakespeare's Julius Caesar, the play.
Mm-hmm.
Lucius is Brutus's servant, and Brutus, of course, is one of the main conspirators trying to kill Julius Caesar.
Yep.
A tu Brute. There is also a Lucius in Titus Andronicus, which is another Shakespeare play, but I have not read it, and so I don't care. And, well, I care, but I cannot talk about it with any authority. Yeah. That's his name.
Yeah, so Arthur... Mr. Weasley tells us that he is essentially ransacking, or not ransack. He is
Mr. Weasley has referenced before that the Ministry is conducting raids.
Yes,
to try to find like illegal objects that wizards have stowed, like say flying cars.
Yes.
Lucius, however, is trying to unload these things
before they get to him. So he's saying like, yes, my name still has power. That's why I haven't been come to yet. But there's a good chance they'll come and search my place anyway. And there's some stuff that would be embarrassing if they found.
He has this very sly way of speaking that also should make you immediately distrust this guy. Like Draco is complaining about Harry, which I find very charming because Lucius is like, Draco, shut up. You've been talking about Harry Potter all summer. Like, I don't care.
I like that a lot. You have told me this at least a dozen times already.
Yeah. And so that alone is very charming. But Lucius then says that it's not okay to talk badly about Harry Potter when most of our kind regard him as the hero who made the Dark Lord disappear. And this is such a slithery way of saying this because he's like, don't talk badly about Harry Potter because he's an all right dude. He's saying, don't talk badly about Harry Potter because that's going to make people suspect you.
Yeah.
Because Harry Potter is known for being a good guy. Not I think Harry Potter is a good guy. And also, the hero who made the Dark Lord disappear is also a real slithery way of saying this because he's not saying the hero who defeated the Dark Lord.
Just made him go away for a while.
Yeah. And yeah. especially disappear is indicating to me
like that, he's expecting him to come back.
Right. Yeah. Lucius is a shady, shady guy.
Oh, yeah. Lucius brushes off Malfoy, Draco, and is like, don't touch anything.
Yeah.
Let me do my business.
Yeah.
So he's selling stuff to Mr. Borgen. And it seems like he's arranging for all these things to be picked up from his house. Mansion.
Yeah. Almost, and it seems like almost temporarily, you know, yeah. like get these out of the way. And then once the raid happens, we'll talk again. You know, he's not saying like, I'm going to sell you these things so you can sell them for me on consignment or something. It's just like, hey, I need to take care of some stuff. Mm-hmm. Borgen, I don't know if you caught this, but Borgen puts on his pince-nez. Did you see that?
I did. I was trying to remember why we needed to pronounce that.
Because we got an excellent listener email from Robin about Madame Pins, which Robin claimed we had been mispronouncing, and that it was supposed to be like pince-nez, like the glasses. Mm-hmm. So I think that this lends some credibility to that theory, because it indicates that Rowling knows what these glasses are because she wrote them down. But yeah, I found that real funny. I got real excited about that. And also, I'm certain that I probably said that wrong again, because I didn't watch that weird little video we found last time.
I'm sure there's a better way to find out how to say that word than like an 11 minute video of a guy looking at old glasses.
The reason that I saw that video in particular was because it, like, that's the person I would trust to say that word, compared to like the Emma Saying YouTube channel, which is this disembodied voice that pronounces words for you.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, whatever, but I was real jazzed about Borgen putting on his pince-nez.
So, yes, they get to, or Malfoy wanders off like he's not supposed to, and finds a like leathery old hand on a cushion.
And this is the Hand of Glory.
Yes. And I liked that Draco just goes, can I have that? He doesn't know what it is, what it's for. And Mr. Borgen runs over, abandons Malfoy, abandons Lucius, and goes straight over to Draco and like tells him all about it.
Because he's like a skeevy salesman.
Yeah.
You know,
he's looking to get money and not to lose money to store things.
Yeah. And I think also he understands that like if he hooks Draco, Draco is going to bug Lucius about this until Lucius buys it for him.
Mm-hmm.
But I have some stuff about the Hand of Glory. This is coming.
Let's start with how he describes it. So,
okay.
In the Harry Potter universe, this is how it works. You insert a handle. You insert a candle and it gives light only to the holder.
Yes.
Best friend of thieves and plunderers.
Nice. I have some stuff about the Hands of Glory. This is coming from the Harry Potter Wiki. It is on the Harry Potter Wiki page called Hand of Glory.
Mm-hmm.
Under the section lore, I'm going to read the first two paragraphs directly. So the Hand of Glory is a magical instrument which appears often in mystic lore. And that meaning like outside of the Harry Potter series.
Mm-hmm.
It is described, so blah, blah, blah. In general, it is described as a severed and preserved human hand, maybe made of wax, with a candle implanted on it. The various powers ascribed to a Hand of Glory include the ability to immobilize anyone who looks at it or unlock any door it comes across. It was traditionally used by thieves, since it allowed them to see in otherwise total darkness, open locked doors, and immobilize guards. In some dark magical ceremonies, Hands of Glory were reputed to have been used as the source of illumination. Various grisly myths surround the making of a Hand of Glory, which fits well with the reputation of Borgen and Burks. The hand is said to be that of an executed criminal, usually by hanging. Most often the criminal himself is a murderer or other serious felon. Other myths say that a hanged man's blood is necessary to the recipe, or that his body fat is used to make the candle. Isn't that charming?
Very. And nice, I guess it fits with Burke's backstory or potential backstory.
Yeah. So keep an eye out for the Hand of Glory.
Yeah.
There's another item, too, that is mentioned real offhand. in this section, a cursed opal necklace. So keep your eyes out for that one, too. So this all plays out. The Malfoys eventually leave because Lucius is like, I have a very important appointment to get to.
Basically, it's settled that like, okay, here's what you're going to take from me and I'm selling it to you.
Right. Yes. So the Malfoys leave. Harry waits until Morgan goes back into the back room.
But Morgan does make a comment right after. So he drops his slimy demeanor. What did they say?
Something
oily?
Like that. Ugh. These are bad words. I like that this sort of indicates the two-faced nature of salesmen as well. That like he's going to butter those Malfoys up.
Yeah.
And then the second they're gone, he's going to be like.
Yes. Oily is the word that was used.
Yeah.
He dropped his oily manner. And then he speaks to himself saying, good day yourself, Mr. Malfoy. And if the stories are true, you haven't sold me half of what's hidden in your manner.
Yeah.
So
Lucius
I guess
is a bad dude.
Yeah. And Lucius apparently is very confident in his security system or hiding places.
Security system is really funny to think about in the magical world.
Well, maybe it's more like
he's got his Nest doorbell. this whole thing is just like you almost want to take a shower after reading about these people. They just sound gross.
Well, let's get more gross. Let's step out of Borgin and Burke's and
where there is a woman selling human fingernails.
I don't know if she's selling it or she's just holding it. That's like, you know, some people are comforted by a blanket or a teddy bear.
No.
And she has not like fingernail clippings, but whole fingernails.
It's so bad. It is the most disgusting thing you could imagine. And like not even fingernail clippings. It is whole
I literally
fingernails.
Just said that.
It's
I just said that.
I'm in shock. And then Hagrid appears. Thank goodness.
Yes, Hagrid saves the day. He wipes the soot off of Harry by just like
giving him
smacking him and knocking him over.
Hagrid's like, what are you doing here? This is disgusting. And then he knocks over the tray of fingernails. And Harry's like, I got here accidentally. I was in the fireplaces. He's like, what are you doing here, Hagrid?
Just going after some flesh-eating slug repellent.
Are they flesh-eating slugs, or does the repellent eat the flesh of the slugs? This is a question that has been in my brain for the last,
I think flesh-eating slugs are infesting the plants.
Okay.
The cabbages.
They're eating the school cabbages.
Yes.
Yeah. I also really enjoy the idea of Hogwarts having a cabbage patch.
Where is the food going to come from?
I don't know. That's a big question that I also have about Hogwarts. But
Hagrid grows all of it.
Yeah. Using manual labor.
Yes. Well, you can't magic food.
Is that a rule?
Yes.
Okay.
You can't like create it.
Okay.
You have to have something and turn it into something else.
Yes. Well, Hagrid brings Harry. And like, I know it's called Nocturne Alley. I always assume that it was bigger than just like waddling down the street a little until you see Gringotts, because it seems like they get out of there pretty quick.
Well, I mean, Hagrid's there. Nothing dangerous is going to happen. So the story just moves past.
Right.
And then Hagrid almost sheepishly says, how come you didn't answer my letters?
And does Harry tell him the whole story?
Yes.
About, like,
just,
okay.
You know, about the Dursleys
and Hagrid
Dobby.
Has nothing to say about this?
Well, he starts. So, yeah, right after Harry explains everything, Hagrid starts, lousy muggles. If I'd have known. And then he gets cut off by Hermione.
Yes. Yeah. So Harry reunites with his group. He sees Hermione for the first time in a while. And then they're kind of set loose to explore Diagon Alley for a little while. Like Fred and George see Lee Jordan and everybody kind of goes off in their separate ways.
And Mr. Weasley fixes Harry's glasses.
Yes, which is important because in the movie, Hermione does it and breaks the underage magic law thing that was introduced literally like two chapters ago. But we're not talking about the movie. Harry and Ron are like ogling stuff in a Quidditch supply shop, and Hermione drags them off to buy ink and parchment. And I highlighted that, and I wrote, Hermione is me and I am Hermione.
You love your pens. You love one specific type of pen.
Well, I've actually changed it. I used to be a Uniball Signo 307 girl, but I've switched to the Ultra Fine Pilot G2s because they're easier to get.
I did not mean to give you an opportunity to talk about them.
Yeah, catch me on my other podcast, which is about pens and notebooks.
Which has a wide variety of options, considering she just listed the two pens she's ever used.
I also use lead pencils.
Lead pencils?
You know what I mean. Anyway.
No, nobody knows what you mean. Mechanical pencils?
Sure, whatever. It's a lead pencil.
No, it's a mechanical pencil with graphite in it.
This is my podcast.
If you are seriously saying lead pencil, you know, that's like, oh, I have a box full of really old pencils before they changed laws and realized how unsafe it was.
Okay.
And I exclusively use those because I want to die soon.
They go to the bookstore.
Some ice cream. Harry treats them all to some ice cream.
Yeah, because he's rich.
Which is like peanut butter and jelly flavored. They specifically said strawberry and peanut butter flavored. Mm. Which I don't know if I would like that or not, but I would definitely try it.
Yeah. Well, remember you got that Pop Rocks ice cream at Friendly's, or was it like cotton candy?
It was cotton candy with Pop Rocks in it, and it was delicious.
It sounded revolting. I stand by it. Yeah. All right. Well, they get ice cream and then they go to the bookstore. The bookstore is called Flourish and Blotts.
They said the thing.
What?
The name of the chapter.
Oh, yeah. It is the name of the chapter. Well, I wanted to know where Flourish and Blotts came from. And unfortunately, nobody on the internet did the work for me, so I can't cite the Harry Potter Wiki or the Harry Potter Lexicon or Galadriel. So I went to the Oxford English Dictionary. So to flourish something is to adorn, decorate, embellish, or ornament it. In penmanship, for example, a flourish is a decoration on a letter or writing consisting of flowing curves executed with a sweep of the pen. So, you know, when people add unnecessary swoopy mm-hmm. stuff to writing.
And a blot is just like a blot
of ink. Gotten there yet. Okay. So with books, they can be embellished with what we call flourishes. So like colorful pages, decorative designs. You see this a lot in like old storybooks, maybe. I don't know. I'm thinking of the way that the Snow White Disney film opens with like the book opening and you see the like decorated storybook.
Like the swirl thing the edges. Yeah.
Yeah. Those are flourishes. Mm-hmm. So that makes sense for a bookstore. And like Joe said, out of turn, a blot is an ink pen. And so I like this because an ink blot usually indicates a mistake or a correction that somebody had to make. So I like the idea of like, we got the fancy, pretty books, and also we have the ones that are mistakes. I like
that. We have
a
wide range of books.
Yeah. That really entertained me. I did, after I did all this research, briefly consider that maybe the bookstore is following a naming schema like the like Borgen and Burke's, where it's two guys, one named Borgen, one named Burke. So like maybe this bookstore is one guy named Flourish, one guy named Blot. But I like my idea better.
Okay.
And there's no evidence to suggest that there is a person named Flourish. There's no like Mr. Flourish
here. Mr. Blotts doesn't escort them out after their quarrel.
No. So they do meet at the bookstore and everybody is kind of gathered here. Like this is the meeting place. And the bookstore is having a book signing for Magical Me, which is Gilderoy Lockhart's new book and a great name for an autobiography.
Yes. And specifically, it is an autobiography and not the other books that he's done, which are all like informative.
Right. Informative is a generous word. Well,
he's selling them as like, here's like a how to.
Yeah. Yeah, but Magical Me is just about him.
Yes.
So let's talk a little bit about Gilderoy. Gilderoy is an interesting name. So do you know what it means to gild something?
I know what a guild is.
Different.
But,
no.
Okay. Then no.
G-I-L-D. Guild. So to guild something is to put like a gold veneer on it. You'll see this a lot with jewelry where they will use like a cheap metal for something and then gild it, which is to cover it with like a thin layer of gold to make it seem more expensive or impressive than it actually is. That's a real interesting part of a name to give someone. And then Roy, which I'm getting this part now from the Ultimate Unofficial Guide to the Mysteries of Harry Potter by Galadriel. Galadriel. I think it's Galadriel Waters, but I'm just going to keep saying Galadriel. Galadriel notes that Roy, R-O-I, and I don't know if I'm saying that right, is French for king. So Gilderoy is a gilded king.
Yep.
Yep. And that's all we'll say about that.
Anything about Lockhart other than
I didn't really find anything
entrancing? And
that's what I think the Harry Potter lexicon speculated, like he's kind of grabbing the hearts of women, mm-hmm. because all the people in the crowd for this book signing are women.
Yeah.
Plus like Harry and Ron.
Well, they're there to purchase the books that he's making them buy.
Do you think it's a little convenient that Hermione proposed they meet in Diagon Alley on the day that Gilderoy Lockhart was there?
I'm not going to say ulterior motives. She acts excited, specifically saying he's the one that wrote all the books we get to read this year. And not as like, I'm a big fan, but like, we're going to meet the textbook writer.
She's such a little nerd.
But I'm sure Hermione was well aware if this was a publicized thing, Hermione was well aware. And that's why she convinced her parents to go that day.
I think I agree. So Gilderoy sees Harry in the crowd and he's like, come on up here.
He specifically sees Harry because Ron insults him. The photographer like moves him out of the way. He's like, this is for the big the Daily Prophet. And Ron goes, big deal.
I like Ron.
Yeah.
So Gilderoy pulls Harry on up. He's like, we're going to make the front page, baby. They take a picture and Gilderoy, he shows off a lot with Harry and he's like, I'm pleased to announce that young Harry here will have the privilege of having me as his Defense Against the Dark Arts teacher.
Yes.
A lot of questions here about why and how, but I don't know that we can get into them.
Well, we don't have the answers yet.
No, we don't. So this scene plays out. Harry gives Ginny the books that he's gifted. And then Lucius and Draco show up. Draco is all, I bet you loved all that attention. Famous Harry Potter.
And Ginny says, no, he didn't like it.
Which is the first time that Ginny has spoken in front of Harry.
Yes, and Harry makes a point of that.
Yes.
Like, he's like, oh,
that's new.
I've never heard you speak before.
Yeah. Which is a little weird. And then Lucius shows up and makes fun of the Weasleys' secondhand books. And I ragged on Draco a lot in Philosopher's Stone for making fun of the Weasleys for being poor. So it's great to know that Lucius also does this.
Like this adult has nothing better to do than to insult.
Like, I guess you can hand wave it away a little bit when an 11-year-old does it. Like, yeah, he's a piece of garbage, but like, maybe he doesn't know better at this point. No,
he was taught that way. That's the way he's supposed to act.
It's disgusting.
Yeah.
Arthur
but you could also you could also see that as taunting him because what Arthur's doing is against his beliefs. And it's also putting him at risk. So Arthur.
Oh, okay. You mean Arthur's job?
Yeah. Arthur's raids are a threat to him.
Yeah.
So he's insulting him however he can. This is also serves as a distraction, which we can't get into.
Yes. Arthur does not like this.
No. Arthur attacks.
In the bookstore.
In the bookstore. Knocking down several. And like moments ago, this bookstore was filled with witches, like
fanning over Lockhart. Witches.
So hopefully no one was injured. You know, they knocked over bookshelves like several.
Yeah.
In this brawl.
Yes. And they have a scuffle. Molly is like, Arthur, don't do this. And like the poor bookshop guy is like, hey, could you take this outside? And they keep beating each other up until Hagrid shows up and breaks things up.
Here this chapter to just fix things.
He's a real fixer. I like too that he is breaking up this fight because I don't even think that he's using his strength to do it.
He's just lifting them.
Yeah. Like he's just big.
Yeah.
And that's enough.
And they make a point of like him being big is also why they weren't charged for like property damage or anything.
Like who's going to walk up to Hagrid and be like, you owe me something.
You broke that bookshelf.
Yeah. But also like it's magic and they can just say reparo and it's all fine.
Yeah.
So nobody cares. But I do think that it is significant. And I think we talked about this with Philosopher's Stone as well, because there's that scene where Ron punches Malfoy. Or does Neville punch Malfoy?
I think Ron punches Malfoy.
That they're having a physical fight. Neither of them, like, curse each other.
Like, yeah, that would be reckless.
Yeah, much better to punch each other.
Exactly.
But no, I think safer. That this is a significant line that we see, that when the characters are deeply upset by something, like when they are attacked personally, like Arthur's family is attacked and his ability to provide for his family is attacked, and really everything Arthur stands for. And so he reacts physically, like they aren't preoccupied kind of with the artifice of magic.
I've been thinking of it as there are more repercussions. If you're about to cast a spell on another person,
okay,
you will get, they walked out, they had a fist fight in a bookstore and walked away and went to a bar.
Mm.
If
not
they
together,
were,
to clarify.
No. But if they were shooting curses at each other,
okay.
First of all, it's a lot easier to hurt a bystander or do permanent damage to something.
Right.
But there would definitely be more repercussions for misuse of magic.
Okay. That's one way of looking at it. Yeah. I think that's valid. They finish up this fight. Lucius throws a book in Ginny's cauldron. Lucius
does
that. Yes,
it's the book he picked up. That was all raggy.
Yeah.
Raggedy was her like
Transfiguration
book, that he picked up to insult. That was what was in his hand when Arthur punched him in the first place.
And that's kind of how the chapter ends. There is a line about Harry thinking that flu powder is not his favorite way to travel. Understandable.
Yes.
I would like to ask, what do you think your preferred magical method of transport would be? There's broomsticks, flying cars, flu powder.
And train. That's all we know right now.
Yeah.
I feel like broomsticks would be a lot of fun. I feel like that's limited in when and where you can use it.
Okay.
Flu powder seems to be a lot faster. It's the fastest option we know of at the moment.
It's also the dirtiest option.
And I'm okay with that.
Okay.
Like, Molly brought along a clothes brush. She comes over with a giant brush specifically for brushing soot off clothes.
I like to imagine it's, you know, when people like beat carpets.
Yeah, it's just a stick.
I like to think about that.
No, I'm picturing just like a big paintbrush. And she's just like swatting stuff away with it.
That's ridiculous, Joe. No, I think absolutely not a broomstick. I am way too much of a nervous person for that. Flying car seems almost like an airplane. So, and I hate airplanes. So that is out.
Sounds like you don't want to be in the air at all.
Flu powder sounds terrifying. So I guess train, because it's on the ground. It seems safe.
Nothing is safe.
And that's the chapter.
Yeah.
And that brings us to Spell of the Week. So here's the problem with Spell of the Week that Joe discovered. There are apparently 65 spells in the Harry Potter series.
About that.
And are those named spells?
These are spells that are like explicitly named and not just like, oh, a magical thing happened. There's no other information about it.
Okay. So let's say around 65 spells. We're going to run out of spells if we do this every chapter. Like somewhere in probably Goblet of Fire, we would run out of spells.
But also there are significant times to talk about each spell.
Yeah.
Like they're used that, like we've had opportunities to talk about certain spells and be like, well, let's try and figure out something else so that.
Because there's a chapter where this is featured prominently or where this will be a lot better to talk about.
Or like a lot of the details we have involve
this chapter.
This thing in the future.
Yeah. So it's hard. So we're going to fudge Spell of the Week a little bit sometimes.
We'll have to make a new.
I think we can keep the Spell of the Week branding. But sometimes it's not going to be a spell. Sometimes it might be, say, a magical object or something related to magic.
Very loose things.
Yeah. So we'll try to stick to spells as we can.
But this week it's flu powder.
Yeah. The spell of the week is flu powder.
Clearly not a spell. It is a powder, like we've talked about, that transports people to a determined destination. That powder, destination has to be part of the flu system, which are chimneys that were approved by the Ministry of Magic.
I believe it's called the Flu Network.
The Flu Network?
Flu.net, if you will.
Yes, the Flu Network. But those are fireplaces that are connected, and you need specific approval to be part of that network.
Yes.
By the Ministry of Magic. This prevents a muggle accidentally activating it and being visited by wizards, or accidentally, I don't know why they would find something in a flower pot and throw it into a fireplace, but they wouldn't accidentally be transported anywhere. Mm-hmm. So there is a process to become part of that flu network. To get off of the flu network, though, is just a spell.
Okay.
Yeah, so you don't have to be worried about, like, random people coming. So if you're trying to hide, if you're trying to not be found, mm-hmm. take your house off the flu network, I guess.
Okay.
Hogwarts itself is part of the flu network, but you cannot transport yourself, your whole self, to or from Hogwarts using the flu network. You can...
transport part of yourself.
You can transport... you can transport your... head, essentially, and speak, or just your voice. Mm-hmm. You could also, to anywhere, do that. You don't have to transport your whole body. You can even just transport a hand.
That would be creepy.
It would be weird, but you're you're able to do that. You're able to just transport part of your body.
Yeah. And that's, of course, so that weirdos can't come in and mess with the children. And also so the children can't escape.
Escape is a harsh term.
No,
but yes,
like,
there's a lot of protections. There's very limited ways to access Hogwarts.
Right. Yes. Yeah. Think about the mayhem that Fred and George would get up to if they could just flew
away.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Flew away.
Well, speaking of that, it was invented by a witch named Ignatia Wildsmith in the 13th century.
This is all from Pottermore.
Well, I'm getting this from...
it's from Pottermore.
Okay.
Yeah.
The only licensed producer in Britain is called Flu Pow.
Which is a good name.
Pow is P-O-W, which is just powder without the dur.
Yep.
So Flu Pow has sold it for centuries at the same... oh, for... 100 years at the same price of 2 sickles a scoop.
Which I converted using the wizard money converter on the Harry Potter lexicon. 2 sickles is 78 cents in American dollars and on today.
So it's 78 cents a scoop of flu powder.
A scoop. And you only need a pinch to throw into the fire to travel. So like it's possible you're getting multiple travels out of that 78 cents, which is why it makes sense for the Weasleys to be using flu powder, because it's a cheap way to travel, especially when you have 8,000 kids. Yeah.
Yes. That was also part of why J.K. Rowling created flu powder. It was a way to transport underage kids without having them use magic.
Right. Yeah.
So that got them long distances without her having to worry about, like, well, how are they getting there?
Do you have anything else about flu powder?
Yes, absolutely. Still from Pottermore, or from the old Pottermore, a character named Rutherford Poke is quoted. He is a healer at St. Mungo's, which is a wizard hospital. Mm-hmm. He is quoted as saying, "It's 2 sickles a scoop, people, so stop being cheap. Stop throwing powdered rune spore fangs in the fire and stop blowing yourselves out of the chimney. If one more wizard comes in here with a burned backside, I swear I won't treat him. It's 2 sickles a scoop." That was because there are several people, at least one person a year, who attempts to make their own flu powder, mm-hmm. I guess to save money.
To save 78 cents. Yep.
And always get hurt. Always get hurt.
Yeah.
Which is why it's so regulated.
Yeah. And the recipe is a secret.
Yes. It's a guarded secret by Flu Pow.
Yeah. I would like to note that flu, F-L-O-O.
It's based on flu, F-L-U-E.
Which is like a chimney and a fireplace kind of. I don't know exactly.
You like open the flue to let the
smoke come out. Just wanted to point that out for some people that have trouble with these things, like people that don't understand why Diagonale or Nocturnale are called those.
So
things.
You.
People that maybe went through a big part of their life not getting it. Is that it for flu powder of the week?
That's our magical object for this podcast.
Also known as Spell of the Week.
Sure. We can keep that name if you'd like.
I would like to keep the sound effect. So.
We can keep the sound effect.
That's what it sounds like. And yeah, that's our episode. So we don't have any emails for reasons we've explained in detail before, but you can send an email to owlpost@podtrificustotalis.com with your thoughts, your corrections, your preferred magical method of transport, anything like that. Email us at owlpost@podtrificustotalis.com. You can also visit our website, which, get ready, it's called PotrificusTotalis.com. And there you can find all our episodes. You can find easy links to subscribe to our show. Some of the episodes have transcripts for the ones that I didn't have a lot going on in my life at the time and typed up transcripts for. You can do all that cool stuff on our website. And there's also a page where you can email us from there if you don't know how to write an email or something. There's a page. You can do that. And of course, the best thing you can do is tell a friend about our podcast. Reviews are cool too, but I would rather you say, "Hey friend, I like Harry Potter. You like Harry Potter. Let's listen to two people who know a medium amount of Harry Potter talk about it."
Medium is generous.
Yeah. Yeah, so tell your friends about Patrick Viz Totalis, have them listen to it, and if you are really charming, write us a review. It's okay.
If you're charming or charmed?
If you're charmed by our podcast, and if you're a charming person.
Okay.
Who wants to do something nice for us, you can leave us a review. So that's all the cool ways you can interact with us. You can also, we're on social media, you know how to find
and
things.
Join us next week,
okay,
for
at Potrificus on Twitter. And that's the only one I check. Join us next week for chapter 5,
The Whomping Willow.